We just heard about President Truman's fondness for Aloha shirts, and we continue to explore other presidential ties to Hawaii. Pearl Harbor's chief historian, Daniel Martinez, visited the Truman Museum there in Independence and was surprised to learn of that Hawaii connection.
It was fascinating because I had no idea that the president had collected that kind of thing. Harry Truman does not strike you as a Wren Spooner type. But there's a lot you learn at that library about Harry Truman because he's a distant past. He's my mother and father's past, my grandparents' past. And everybody remembers the monumental decision he has to make. Everybody remembers he inherited World War II when Franklin Roosevelt died. And so when you go through to that museum, it's a cavalcade of the history from him participating in World War I, just a country kid from Missouri that ends up in France. And he's a captain in artillery. He's a man of consequence. And they see a future in him. And politics in Missouri is different. It's very local. It's sort of like here. A lot of people know you. And if they know you and you like you, they'll support you. And you're one of them. And he was the most unlikely candidate to be vice president under Roosevelt because Roosevelt was going to live forever. And almost did. And to have that befall him and all the complications of not only that at that point the war, they knew they were going to win it. The question was the peace. How was that going to happen with all the factions like the Soviet Union, the French, the British, the United States? How do you deal with Japan, China, two Chinas that were emerging, two politics of that would resoundingly change Asia? And so he's caught in this cauldron, and in the museum is panels that take you through these tremendous challenges, changes, victories and disappointments, and a very simple family, one that's more open, a young woman who's his daughter, who is piano player, attractive, kind of nobody knows about her. And they're finding out that the Truman family is far different than the presidential family they had known for almost two decades.
So you really get a different side.
And the first thing that greets you when you walk in is this sign that was on his desk, and how appropriate in these times that he believed the buck stopped here. And you can actually buy replicas of it there in their kind of bookstore, gift store, and his remains are in, it's kind of a circular presidential library, and there's a courtyard area, and it's a very simple grave, and there's an eternal flame of his spirit there, and it's designed beautifully, and it is a venture of discovery because most people today haven't a clue who Harry Truman is.
Well, it must have been a real kick in the pants for you just to see his shirts.
I know. It also touched upon the idea that Hawaii is not that distant. Hawaii is this kind of, in a way, celebratory icon. I've always thought of people come here because it's their dream, the visitors that come. And now that's a dream of people from Asia and all over the world to come to paradise. The real question is, and a lot of his local historians have asked this, what is paradise? And what is paradise at a price? And for, I think, local Hawaiians, I think it's certainly a question that revolves around that politics of memory. And so it is, as one author wrote, a very strange place, especially for the outsider that comes. And if they take the time to understand the culture and explore the possibilities of points of view, it can be a wonderful experience, sometimes painful, but sometimes celebratory.
Talk about the president's connections to Hawaii and Pearl Harbor.
The president's visits to Hawaii were at first based on not necessarily coming to visit the people, but to visit the military. And certainly Franklin Roosevelt was every bit part of that. He made, I believe, two visits here, and one prior to the war and one during the war. And general planning for the fall of Japan was in the final meeting between Nimitz, MacArthur, and the president. Hawaii found itself a crossroads for the presidents, in particular for overseas visits. President Kennedy, he was the first president to come here to Hawaii, not the, like in the sense the first president, but the first president to visit the USS Arizona Memorial. And he was part of the second string of presidents, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, that were World War II veterans. And it went on, Nixon, Johnson, Ford, Bush, all of those World War II veterans, every one of them, both Republican and Democrat. And all of those crossroads from the White House to Hawaii, they met those.
And Jimmy Carter was actually stationed here.
Yes, Jimmy Carter was part of the submarine force, a Navy commander. I looked into some of Carter's stories, and the only place where the one thing I couldn't find out was his billet, and I wasn't sure if he was with his wife at that time. I looked at the area where they'd be, and that's right up on the hill where above Makalapa Hill. But there's also bachelor quarters that are located in the submarine area, so that's yet to be determined about that. It was a short stint for him, but he certainly was here and commanded a submarine. Obviously, he was one of Rickover's boys. And if people don't know who Admiral Rickover is, get to Wikipedia as fast as you can, because it's one of the most fascinating characters in the modern American Navy. He was the father of the nuclear Navy, and the shadow of that is stretches across the landscape at Pearl Harbor, even to this day, and across the world. It is our main deterrent. And so Rickover handpicked all these individuals, and he saw something in Carter that he wanted. Man, he got him. Yeah, the Jimmy Carter visit is interesting. You know, a lot of presidents passed through here on the way to the war, and determining when and where they came through. Kennedy's boat came through here. The PT-109 ported here on its way out to the Solomons. And you know, that PT boat was built on the east coast of the United States. He did his training there, right there in Newport, and the facilities are still there right south of Newport, where all these PT boat skippers who would have these incredible plywood boats that are over 70 feet long and at high speed attack the enemy. Scary stuff. And of course, Kennedy's legend grows with the collision with the Amigiri in, I believe, 1943 in the Blackett Straits. So when you think about that, you think about other types. And as presidents, when they started to come, it was pretty evident. Teddy Roosevelt came here by proxy, and I say that because he was the one that sent the Great White Fleet around the world. And it was very interesting because he met the fleet up in Washington State before they started out across the Pacific, and he actually feared that the Japanese Navy would be lying in wait for them and sink them because of what had happened with the Russians in the Russo-Japanese War. That didn't happen, but those fears were there. But the president had sent the fleet. So in a way, President Roosevelt, by proxy, went around the world, his influence, and did stop in Hawaii and did salute the people. That fleet saluted the people of Molokai as the people with Hansen's disease were there, and they paraded by, and there had been a request to do that, and it happened. So there is a lot of that kind of American influence through the presidents. And then you start seeing the presidents come here, and the first president to come to Hawaii was during the World War II, and that would be Franklin Roosevelt. I might have missed one, and I couldn't find out about President Harding and others that might have made here, but they're certainly the most celebratory ones, or the ones that were of notice and on purpose, was the president coming out here and doing an inspection of the military facilities, went to the airfields, went to Schofield Barracks, was it the naval base at Pearl Harbor, inspected the fortifications and guns along the south coast stretching from Diamond Head all the way out to Eva, went out to Eva.
Wow.
So he got a full inspection, was at Eva Field, our endangered battlefield out there. And so he left his mark more than any president, Franklin Roosevelt, left that mark. He visited everywhere all over the island, but it was based on an inspection.
And I think when I last saw you out there, it was the big ceremony, and it was President Barack Obama and Japan's Abe.
Prime Minister Abe,
and that was a big deal to have the two of them there.
Yeah, you know, I think of the, you know, President Kennedy's visit in 1963, President Johnson's visit in 1968, Richard Nixon in 1972, and President Ford was here in 1975, went to the memorial, very, very well photographed event. Jimmy Carter, 1977. And in 1980, the National Park Service takes over management of the USS Arizona Memorial. But prior to that, Ronald Reagan, this is the real mystery. I have citations for Ronald Reagan visiting. And then I talked to my cohort in crime, the historian for the Presidential Library in California, in Los Angeles area, and he has no record of Ronald Reagan at all visiting the memorial, and not even as governor. There was a citation that's on the internet in which they list some of the visitations to the presidents, and it appears he didn't make a visit.
So he may be the only president that didn't set foot on the Arizona Memorial?
That's right, because you would have George Bush here in 1990. He followed 1991 with his visit. Bill Clinton made three visits to the memorial because end of World War II, and that he came early in his presidency with the First Lady, and then later in his presidency. And then Barack Obama. I think that President Obama is the most visited because he's been out there at least 4 to 5 times. He went once just with the Navy, didn't involve us, but he came as senator. I think it's curious because people often ask, what's it like to be around a president? Well, you get the envelope of the presidency and all the Secret Service and all the details and all the hierarchy within the National Park Service, United States Navy. It's all wrapped up in that. And when he came as senator, Eileen Martinez, you might have remembered her. She was chief of our interpretation.
Yes, I remember her.
And she's retired now. But Eileen and I were told in a meeting by the superintendent, and then by also the regional office in San Francisco, that if you violate any of the rules, like you can't pose for pictures with them, you know, you can't show, you can't shake their hands, because at that time, everybody's going to say, what's that all about? He was running for president, so we could not show any favoritism towards any candidate. So I had met Senator McCain earlier, but he wasn't running for president, but
it's interesting.
Very nice guy.
The protocol.
The protocol. So they say, and if you do this, you're going to lose your jobs. And Eileen was frightened to death. She was scared that she'd do that. So what happens is, so they come on, and I had no idea how big the party was. I thought it was going to be, you know, Michelle and the children and then Senator Obama. And what happens is he brought about 9 kids. And so he brought all, so it was all local kind, you know, they all had them. So there was a passel of people that came off. There was almost 25 people. And so I got up there and I was starting to do my, and the senator turns to me and he says, could you do a tour for the children? And I said, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, how do I tell these 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, maybe an 8-year-old, about what this place is, because this place is, you know, what it is. It's a place where there's men interred.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's sacred, and there's men still interred in there. And so I talked about the ship and showed them that and stumbled kind of through it because I was that was a curveball I didn't see coming. But that's part of these visits. You'll never see those coming because the questions may be not the ones you anticipated.
And then I recall when Obama and Abe were there, you also had the opportunity to take them, I think, on the Admiral's yacht.
Yeah,
and I think Caroline Kennedy was on that
yacht.
That. And there was a marvelous picture of her father taking that same boat.
Yes, that same barge. Yeah, that was, you know, that Jacqueline Ashwell, who's the superintendent, was with me. And we were right there. I was there for the subject matter expertise. She was there because she's the superintendent. We were there with the admiral and part of his family. And this was going to be the first time the Prime Minister of Japan had ever visited the memorial. So the historical moment was not lost on us. And I was extremely nervous. I mean, it's like this is, I had been in the minor leagues and now I'm in the big leagues. And I'm there to engage in this conversation, answer the president's questions or the prime minister's questions. And the questions revolved about, you know, the things about the commemoration and keeping in mind that the president had previously visited Hiroshima. So in a way, I think but most people don't understand there was a protocol to that. By the president of the United States going to the place in which the vanquished hold and cherish, and it's their icon of World War II, Hiroshima. And when he went there with the protocol of visiting their place that's a shrine and part of their collective memory. And by him doing that, it allowed Abe to then ask to come and reciprocate. I never thought personally in my lifetime that would ever happen because the politics and the protocols were there. And we were fortunate that we had that kind of foresight to do that. You could see the healing of wounds. The ceremony that followed afterwards was incredible. And as you know, being as versed in protocol as well, Japanese officials don't hug. They shake hands. They may clasp a hand over, but they shake hands. When I saw Abe hug Everett Hyland,
yeah, when you think of the history, you appreciate the present and those moments that just bring it home.
Yeah, that's an emotional touch point.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down and kind of bringing this history to the forefront as we honor our presidents and we honor a very special place.
Yeah, it is. And I think that just in closing this thing, that day when we were on the boat, and I had an opportunity to share with President and President Abe the story of President Kennedy was going to do the first move towards this reconciliation. He had taped a program, a speech rather, to be presented in Japan that he was going to be the first president in the post-war period to visit. He was going to bring the crew, the living members of PT-109 with him to meet the captain and the crew of the Amagiri, the Japanese destroyer that cut his boat in two. And that was going to be the first outreach or reconciliation. What was surprising that it was that this speech that was going to be broadcast was going to be broadcast by Telstar on November 23rd, 1963. And we all know what happened on November 22nd. So that first step of reconciliation ended in the streets of Dallas. And so obviously it was broadcast, and I didn't know that Carolyn Kennedy didn't know that. It was a moment that struck me as so unique that I was able to share something that another historian had written in the newest book on PT-109 that she didn't know, and I think it brought comfort to her.
And that was Daniel Martinez, chief historian of the Pearl Harbor National Memorial, sharing stories about our presidents and their links to Hawaii.